Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, this is Fred Film Radio. You're listening to the daily program Global Critics Venice Voice from the Venice Film Festival. I'm Rita Di Santo, I'll be hosting the program. And tonight with me, I have in the studio Ben Kroll, welcome back.
Hello, hello.
David Sanchez, welcome back.
Hello, hello, hola.
From Spain. And Bianca, welcome back from Lithuania.
Well, thank you.
So we start with Green Borders, in competition by Polish director Agnieszka Holland. It's a movie that opens our ears on the life of ordinary people, struggles the right to asylum is only on the paper. It's mainly about Syrian refugees trying to cross the border between Belarus and Poland. It's definitely a political film, and at the end we understand that Ukrainian refugees are crossing the border every day and welcomed by Polish citizens, but Syrian refugees are wandering around the woods, often being tortured. And the idea of this movie started when a friend of Agnieszka found a body on the border of a dead person, frozen and naked. I just wondered for you, Bianca, if it's been from Lithuania, do you feel this problem closer?
Yes, because we actually had the same problem. I think it wasn't even the first that the Belarus sent them to Poland. I think they sent first to us because we took the leader of the opposition to Lithuania. We gave her asylum. So Lukashenko and Putin were really angry at us. So they started sending to us not only Syrians, but people from Iraq. I don't know if the situation was quite similar as in Poland, but definitely it was like trying to blockade the refugees coming in, and there was no support from European Union. So the film is very relatable to us, and also it shows the real horrors, because as Polish people, we're really supportive for Ukrainians, but we're not the same with the refugees. Like, general, why society and the government and the media sometimes also tries to get those clickbaits by portraying them negatively, in a negative light. So I think her film is very important to talk about the current events. I think it's brave to show also from different sides, from border police, from activists, the refugees. I think it's a clever made film with a really good script. Cinematography-wise, she had collaborators and she made the research on that as well. So for me personally now, I think it's one of the films that could even get the Golden Lion. It's really one of the strongest ones.
And then we have Enea in competition, another Italian entry by Pietro Castellitto. It's a dazzling, impressive from a technical perspective, dynamic, and a bit overstuffed from a narrative point of view. It's about a rich young boy, Enea, a rich bachelor with a seductive gaze. With his best friend Valentino, Enea gets involved with a millionaire drug ring using Valentino's little plane to distribute cocaine to yachts, tennis courts, luxury palaces. It's a little long and full of too many things. The beauty of the film is a fast-paced tragicomic style, drugs and murder, and is an urban western where guns coexist. It's about a life of excess, and I have to say maybe it's one of the most interesting Italian movies because it's an innovative style, and Pietro Castellitto is a young filmmaker and is the son of a very well-known Italian actor, and his mother is from Ireland, and probably I can see the movie is not the typical Italian story. It's set in Italy, but it's so interesting because you feel like you can be in Colombia or in any other part of the world in a rich family. Anyway, I love the humor. I love when El Palm Tree fell in, on the... Did you see the movie?
Yeah. Huh? Oh. Yeah, I saw it. I think there are interesting points comparing to the other Italian films that I saw. I think this one feels more fresh. The sense of humor is on point. It has, I think, a bit similarity with also maybe Sorrentino films with this lash parties and the characters being like this rich bourgeois just doing what they want to do. But yeah, I think it's quite one of the few interesting Italian films that I've seen here compared to like to the other ones.
I think it's also, it also touched the idea of what is an identity, like cultural identity, cinematographic identity, how young people look at themselves. And there is an interesting moment when they have a party that reminds me of the movie Babylon. Did you have the same idea? Anyway, the interesting things is that in the morning they meet with Enea's brother, and Enea's brother tells Enea why you're dressed like that. Yes. And they just came out from a party, and so I feel that kind of irony as well, you know, how do you have a party? Maybe because you have seen Babylon, you want to make a party with the same style and you dress in the same style.
Yeah, but there could be also, like, I think maybe rich people also like to have this costume parties just to, because they can afford, they maybe even like bored with their daily lives, who just want to be somebody else. And like those parties when you go in costumes with older age or just like dress up for a certain, it kind of maybe gives them also freedom and maybe more excitement just to be someone else instead of having like this, because I think they also get bored with their, even if they have a lot of money, they just get bored because nothing excites them anymore. So I think one of the reasons why the main character goes into drug deal is just because he has already everything, but maybe nothing excites him anymore.
But it's also an interesting line when Valentino tells about his mother, and he said that his mother has depression, and he says, my mother, I think, made depression his identity. So she didn't have anything. So it's like this attach herself to depression. And maybe it's true. It's true that, you can decide, I just want to be depressed. So.
Yeah, it could be the truth, I think. Some people... in general, they like to be, I don't know, portrayed as victims, and they always get in, because it's very convenient. So I think depression is like one of the cases that also people like to say, even if they're not actually depressed, they just like to be portrayed as that, and it becomes their identity.
Unfortunately, we can't spoil anything, but at the end, the ending is very well built, and we will see a king and something that reminds us of some important part of history. Yeah. Our recent history.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, it's a movie that I really like. It was a surprise. We have Ben that has been in the island almost all week.
What island? I've been on a few islands. I've been on the Lido, and then I went to the Lazzaretto Vecchio, which is the VR island, where... a whole other mostra is happening. This is the 7th or 8th, I believe, edition of Venice Immersive. Well, it used to be called Venice VR. Last year, they changed the title to Venice Immersive to be more all-encompassing, or to better encompass like the full breadth of new media production. And it's still going. It's going all the way until the end of the festival. So if anyone is listening in and is curious, I really could not recommend a trip to the island more. I mean, there's a lot of extraordinarily interesting projects and forms of engagement to have there. One of my highlights, one of the highlights that I had, which is also something that's very accessible to everyone, is a project called Jim Henson's The Storyteller, The Seven Ravens. And it's actually not a virtual reality project. It's a mixed reality project. You put on glasses that are basically like sunglasses, and you're given a book, a very nice, well-bound book. And once you open it, the pages basically come alive. It's like a 3D book, and it tells a story, and it's almost like an animated... I mean, it is basically a 3D animated film, but the animation is literally on the page of the book. And to advance the narrative and to advance the narration, you have to turn the pages, sometimes turn the book over, sometimes physically manipulate this object in order to see the narrative through. It's also narrated by the author and celebrity Neil Gaiman, and so there's a little bit of celebrity and star value in there as well. And it's like an interesting fantasy story and a new form of engagement with an existing physical object and a new kind of technology. So that was a real highlight. The other major title this year is a project called Tulpomancer, and maybe the most self-explanatory thing about the project is when the creator was describing it to me, he says, "But I didn't create The Matrix," because it is kind of like The Matrix. You go into a room, you answer a bunch of personal questions to a computer, and then an AI program working with a VR engine is going to recreate or is going to create a tailored VR experience for you based on your own personal memories or your own personal inputs. And so it basically plunges you into your own made-up reality of your dreams or of your memories or of your wishes or of your deepest fears. And at the end of each experience, it destroys the record. And so every single experience is new, every single experience is tailored, and every single experience only ever happens once. It's called Tulpomancer. I think it's already fully booked and fully sold out, but it's starting here in Venice, and it's going to continue an international tour to many different festivals. And that's also what's really interesting about this Venice Immersive, is that projects start here, and sometimes they end up in other places back in Venice. 2 years ago, the project that won Venice Immersive was called Le Bal de Paris, the Ball of Paris. Last year, that project was back at La Biennale in the dance section, because it's a project that mixes dance and VR. And so it's one of the only things in the wider Biennale di Venezia where you can have a project in Venice Immersive section and then also in the dance section, because the lines are a lot more porous with this new kind of media and this new technology, and it's something that's really exciting to experience.
Thank you very much. There is a competition also for the VR session, and can you see anything that really you think you can win?
A project called the name escapes me. I'm going to have to come back to you for a second and give you the actual name. But hold on a second. It is a project that whose name somebody will have to pull up. It's a Dutch project where you walk around a room. You're given this headset, and you start to see the cityscape all around you. You see animals, you see people walking by, and you're walking up a large, almost like a fortress, like on an incline. And then, all of a sudden, you see yourself. Oh, wow. And you become an element of this wider cityscape, and you watch yourself walk across the thing. It uses some kind of crazy technology. Songs for a passerby. Awesome. So I think Songs for a passerby. Did you see it?
Yeah.
What did you think?
To be honest, I was there, and when I saw myself, I was like, "What? It's me! Yeah, it's me!" I was looking at me, like looking at the other person. The feeling was weird, but then I don't know why I say, "Okay, I'm gonna pass through me, through myself." So I keep walking, and I pass through myself, but then you can see yourself in different actions, like far away, not just in front of you, far away. To be honest, I'm not sure if that was kind of like during the Nazis, no? Because the atmosphere was kind of depressed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a very somber, it's almost in black and white. Mm-hmm. It's got a very downbeat or operatic score. It's a word that I hate to use in film criticism because I think it's the most overused word in film criticism. Let me know if you agree. But in this case, you have to say it. It's dreamlike. Mm. It's a very dreamlike experience of discovering yourself in a completely different and unexpected situation.
And actually, you feel like a ghost. To be honest, there's a moment where you are in a train with people sitting down, very real reality. It's like real people. And then I don't know if you did, I just crossed through the people and I was like, okay, I'm going to touch somebody. I don't know. Okay, you really feel like a ghost. By the way, it's a Dutch project and the lady is called Celine Dimen. So okay. She's a great, great artist. So hopefully people will be able to see. Till the ninth,
yeah. And so to answer the question, I think that's certainly one of the most dynamic projects that's playing there this year, and it's one of the projects that clearly has left such a huge impression on nearly everyone that's participated in it.
That's great. Did you have time to go to the VR Island?
Yeah, I watched three projects. Body of Mine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I watched the project Body of Mine, American project. I think it's like best of the best VRs. I think it premiered in South by Southwest.
It's about gender identity.
Yeah, so I think that was quite interesting because it's a full body immersive experience. So you're there are sensors attached to your body and they ask you to choose a different gender avatar. So I chose a man, and it's about gender dysmorphia. That's what it's called.
Dysphoria.
Yeah, gender dysphoria. So it's quite interesting because usually you hear about the body dysphoria, not the gender one. And then I talked with the director. So it was it's really actually like a passion project. I think they had like $2,000 budget, and then maybe they ask maybe someone to pitch in, but it was quite really strange that usually like you get funding and it's quite expensive. Yeah. So
we have just few minutes left, and I was really I would like David to talk about the Iranian movie because in a few minutes yeah. He has a Japanese title, Tatami.
Tatami, exactly. Why it's called Tatami? Because it's a world championship in Georgia, in Tiflis. And it's the world championship is about judo. So judo, they play in a tatami, a square, and also the film is in a square site. So you will see like everything is related. Who are the directors? Two people, Guy Natiu and Sar Amir Ebrahimi. This last one, the lady, you know maybe because she was there playing the main role in Holy Spider. Well, the film is talking about the Iranian team that the government says, well, you have to quit in a moment because we as a government, we don't want to fight against Israel. So you have to quit the competition. But the lady, she doesn't really want to quit because she's like there for fighting. So even if he has to fight against the Israeli girl, there's no problem. Well, this is a very intensive, powerful, and political, as the other film you were talking about, film. Very, very interesting. But the interesting thing also actually is that the director, the guy, is from Israel. And the lady, the co-director, is from Iran. I mean, Iran, living in France, because now she's forbidden to go back to Iran. And to be honest, it's in a black and white movie, by the way. And it's very, very powerful. You cannot move from the place where you are looking at the movie, from the 1 hour and a half, I think is last, and actually it's very well recommended, Tatami. So,
I would say that on my boat ride back from the VR Island today, a woman who I have no idea who she was raving about Tatami, and she was saying that it was the best thing that she's seen in Venice.
For sure, I agree.
Thank you very much, and we will see you tomorrow again for another Aperol Spritz. We'll enjoy the last few days of the festival, and really thank you to my guest tonight.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.